information from local experts in the field of legal health, financial, and home improvement. Join us every week at this time for great educational information from lawyers, doctors, contractors, and specialists in their field. Sit back and enjoy the next hour of Ask the Experts.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Ask the Experts show on 610 ESPN Philadelphia. I'm your host, Maurice Goodman. Ladies and gentlemen, we are in debt. We are swimming in debt. According to an article in The Motley Fool, 80.9% of baby boomers, 79.9% of Gen Xers, and 81.5% of millennials are in some form of debt. Today, we're going to talk about that. We're going to go into a deep dive on it with Philadelphia consumer lawyer, Mr. Robert P. Coco of the law offices of Robert P. Coco in Philadelphia. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you, Reese.
Welcome. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how your experience has brought you to being a consumer lawyer. And some of the things that we're going to do today is talk about debt and consumer debt 101.
Well, I've been a lawyer in Philadelphia for over 20 years now, much of that time practicing consumer law. I first got involved in it when Community Legal Services was looking for civil litigators to fight the banks in predatory lending cases, since they had too many of them to handle themselves. And that's how I became involved in the area of law, and since then have stayed in it, because it's most satisfying to me as a lawyer to be able to help the average person against corporations that exploit people in financially vulnerable situations.
How many years have you been doing it?
Well, so I it makes me feel old when I think about it. It's probably been about 16 years now that or maybe a little bit more, maybe 17 years now I've been practicing consumer law exclusively.
Mm. So tell us a bit about this. I mean, the American public, as we just saw, is in a sizable bit of debt. Let's say I'm overwhelmed by debt problems. You know, what's the first thing one should do when they get started to control the situation?
Yeah, so other than coming to talk to me, the first thing that you should do to get a kind of a 30,000-foot perspective on your situation is to get a copy of your credit report.
Mm.
And although people a lot of times have free access to services like Credit Karma, it's best to get a complete report directly from one of the big three credit reporting agencies, TransUnion, Experian, or Equifax. And there's a website called annualcreditreport.com that's set up between the FTC and the big three credit reporting agencies, where once a year from each of those three agencies, you can get your report for free. So I always suggest to people every 4 months to monitor your credit, get one from each of those, not get them all at once. And that will give you the perspective on where you stand.
How accurate is that picture with those three, the big three?
Well, it's interesting. that's one of the things that can sometimes help you correct your debt picture is that there's very often inaccuracies in them. The reason for that, and something we'll discuss in a couple contexts here today, is that information's all collated by computers. And very little of it is changed by human interaction. There's even been shows on like 60 Minutes that have talked about this. When you dispute it, and we'll talk about how to dispute a debt, but it's being processed maybe in a country like the Philippines for four cents per dispute. So very little attention is being paid to it. And as a result of that, and just as a result of computers confusing people because they have a common name. So if you're John Smith, you have a much higher likelihood of having errors in your credit report. Not because the credit report agencies are trying to be evil, but because they're trying to make money, and they'll do it in the way they spend the least. And that can result in a lot of problems for people because computers don't know who you are and don't care who you are. So you have to make them care.
Well, the interesting thing that draws a question to is, well, how long does a debt stay on, you know, on your credit? I mean, how long would it stick? I mean, some of this stuff is inaccurate, then you have to fight it. But how long does it even stay there when it's there?
It varies according to the type of debt that we're talking about. So commonly, people are familiar with the time period of 7 years for what they call derogatory or negative credit item.
Credit, okay.
But for if you file bankruptcy, that stays on your credit record for 10 years. Child support that's unpaid, judgments that are unpaid, 20 years. Student loans can stay on there forever. So it varies according to the debt. And that's what, and because these debts don't always come off automatically like they should, that's where the dispute process is important.
Fascinating. Now, you know, should I consider filing bankruptcy as my first option to get control of my debt?
Not as your first option. Bankruptcy is absolutely a legitimate way to attack debt and regain your financial security. Mm-hmm. But all too often, people do that as a first recourse.
Okay.
And there's a problem with that. One of the things that the most important thing I want to convey to people here today, to consumers, is don't assume that you owe the debts that are there on that credit report that we just talked about.
Mm.
And very often, if you go to a bankruptcy lawyer who's not sensitive to other areas of consumer law that allow you to fight back against that debt, challenge that debt, they are just going to assume everything is as it is on the credit report, because that's bankruptcy attorney's going to pull a credit report for you. Mm. And they're going to figure out how to discharge what can be discharged and pay back what can be or should be paid back, depending on what your income is and other factors.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, that's the wrong place to start. I always start with the assumption that the creditor or the debt collector who's appearing on your credit report may be saying something inaccurate about you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we start talking about how to fight that. Mm-hmm. Before, maybe you don't have to file bankruptcy at all. Sometimes people file bankruptcy for one reason, most commonly to save their homes. And mortgage servicers these days, once again, they're servicing your loans by computer software.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of undertrained young customer service people who are looking at your loan, but they're not the type of people who are going to be able to make very intelligent decisions about disputes. Very often they have to go to someone above them to make those decisions.
Mm.
And it's very hard to get those people above them to pay attention to you unless you're suing them most of the time, unfortunately. And that's why I always want to talk to people about what their recourse is.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, under the consumer laws, there's a series of federal and state laws that protect you in these situations.
Mm-hmm.
Very often they have a provision in them that allows you to have those bad corporations pay your attorney's fees, pay me.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a fee transfer provision.
Okay.
But it's a way that the legislature allows consumers to level the playing field against corporations who have all the money in the world to throw at you.
Indeed.
And if you can't have a lawyer on a contingent fee basis fight back, very often the average person can't fight back at all.
That I appreciate, because that leads to my next question. So if a consumer is struggling with debt, does it cost them anything to consult with a consumer lawyer like yourself?
No, all my consultations are free. The smallest percentage of my practice where I do have to charge people is when I'm defending them against a debt collector. Commonly, those situations involve mortgage foreclosure defense or credit card defense.
Mm-hmm.
And in those situations, there's no law that allows me to charge somebody else for that. But once again, I try to charge as modestly as possible in those contexts, because sometimes winning those cases can allow you to sue whoever's suing you wrongfully, right? So if we defend successfully, that can set the stage for an affirmative lawsuit against the creditor or debt collector.
Turning the tables, if you will.
Turning the tables. That's what I want people to do, is feel empowered. Instead of looking at their debt situation and saying that it's going to crush them, that not only can you correct it, but sometimes you can turn the tables and sue for money damages on top of that.
Interesting.
And you can reduce your debt even further sometimes in those cases.
So should debts come off automatically after those time periods expire?
Technically, yes, under the law.
Okay.
But that's why it's important to understand the credit dispute process, which is something, again, that I do with people and do it for free. Because, for example, under the Fair Credit Reporting Act, before you can sue a credit reporting agency or, and this is commonly misunderstood, if you have a creditor like a bank or a credit card company reporting something negatively on your report that's not accurate, you can't just dispute it with them and then sue them if they don't correct it. You have to dispute it with the credit reporting agencies too. In fact, that's the most important party to dispute it with if you're going to have recourse legally under the Fair Credit Reporting Act, because the credit reporting agencies are going to communicate with the creditor. That's what they have to do.
So it sounds like you're drawing a lot of people into the fight. So they're going to need somebody like you to come in and help them through this, because if they are in debt and they're trying to get out and they have to create disputes, they're basically picking fights with organizations that say that they're in situation X, and they're saying they're in situation Y, needing you to come in. So,
yes, that's correct. And you know, the credit reporting agencies make billions of dollars a year each, the big three, and despite all the controversy that's around some of them, like Equifax most recently. So you can bet that if when you sue them, they're going to get good lawyers. So it's important to understand how to set these disputes up properly. And it's not complicated. It's like a lot of things in life. It's easy to do once you know what to do. And you can do it on your own. So for a credit dispute, the important thing is to avoid what the easiest thing to do is, which is to go on the websites of the credit reporting agencies and dispute it electronically. The reason why that's not as effective as the proper way, which is to write a letter, which is something people are not accustomed to doing these days anymore. The reason why that's important is you can attach the evidence to your letter of why they're wrong, okay? Because under the law, they're supposed to conduct a reasonable reinvestigation of your dispute. Well, if you don't give them any information, well, we know that people could say anything to get rid of a bad debt. That wouldn't be reasonable to expect them to change your information based on nothing. Now, you have to give them something. Now, whether they read it or not is not your problem. Right. If they don't, then you can sue them.
That is solid. You know what? We're going to take a break right now. You are listening to the Ask the Expert show with Mr. Robert P. Coco of the law offices of Robert P. Coco in Center City. He's the Philadelphia consumer lawyer. And once again, you're listening to the Ask the Expert show on 610 ESPN Philadelphia.
Did you know that you can stop debt collection abuse? You can actually sue debt collectors. A debt collector who abuses you for the collection of a consumer debt can be sued under a law called the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. Debt collectors cannot threaten you with lawsuits, wage garnishment, liens, or arrest. Call your neighbors, friends, or employer about your debts or ask them to give you messages. Yell, swear at, insult, or otherwise disrespect you on the phone. Call you at your work after telling them to stop. Let the law offices of Robert Coco PC defend your rights. Attorney Coco handles auto dealer fraud, illegal background checks for employees, credit report disputes, mortgage abuse, and wrongful foreclosures. Stop worrying today and contact attorney Robert Coco PC at 215-351-0200. That's 215-351-0200.
And ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Ask the Expert show. I'm your host, Maurice Goodman. Really greatly appreciate your time on a Saturday morning coming in and listening to us. We have with us today Mr. Robert Coco, who is of the law offices of Robert P. Coco, the consumer lawyer here in Philadelphia. And we were discussing debt 101. But as you see, he really knows his stuff. So what we want to do is let you all, if you want, to call in and ask him a question. We're at 888-728-9941. That's 888-728-9941. So if you've got any questions, feel free to call in, and our studio engineer will see to it that we get that call right on in there, and we'll go from there. Mr. Coco, we were talking a bit about how we can bring you into the table. I am in trouble. My colleagues in trouble. Studio audience is in trouble with debt. They need somebody to defend them. Here you are, so we really appreciate you being on the show. Here's a question that people have been asking. Is the reporting of debts on their credit card report or their credit report subject to a statute of limitations of 4 years?
No. So the four-year statute of limitations refers to most commonly breach of contracts. So that would involve credit cards, for example. But that's applies to the period of time in which someone can file a lawsuit, and doesn't apply to reporting. So the periods of time that we just discussed, 7, 10, 20-year periods, that's what applies to your credit reporting. Okay. The issue of statute of limitations comes up when you're defending a debt, and that's one of the defenses that we try to make out when there's a credit card company or a buyer of credit card debt suing you. Is they have to sue you within the proper amount of time that they're permitted to under the law. And sometimes you can beat a debt for just that reason, even if you did owe it.
So, I mean, I know we're speaking about the issues of debt, the issues of credit reporting, and the issues of errors. What are the most common errors in credit reports?
So the most common error is probably being confused with someone else regarding your debts.
Okay.
It's debatable. These are all happen with a lot of frequency. But as I was saying earlier, if you have a common name, that creates an enormous amount of problems for people. Mm. If you're Smith, you're Jones, so forth, there's lots of them out there, and the computer sometimes can't tell the difference. They're supposed to collate the information according to your address and your Social Security number, but that information could be similar for people with common names. Mm. So that's something that happens. It's called a mixed file issue. Mm. Probably the other biggest error is caused by ID theft, and which is something you have to dispute.
How big is that?
Very big these days, because cybercrime is way ahead of law enforcement in terms of stopping it or controlling it. It's just unfortunately too easy to even do it outside the jurisdiction where you're stealing the money. Mm. So it makes it very difficult for law enforcement to keep up with it, and it's probably the crime of the future. Wow. So it's something you have to stay on top of. Credit reporting agencies are becoming much better about responding to it since it is so common. So they will flag accounts pretty quickly. The one thing you want to do immediately is file a police report. Not because the police are going to catch anybody because of the reasons I just said, but because it gives credibility to your claim. And as I said before, we want to make sure that the credit reporting agencies find us credible, because if we do have to sue them to get the situation corrected, we have to make sure we complied with the law to allow them to act reasonably.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to probably put a freeze on your report too, which is something very inexpensive to do. It will stop you from applying for credit, so you're going to have to ask the credit reporting agencies to lift it if you, for example, want to get a loan for...
You can freeze
your credit so no new credit inquiries can be made on your account.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it can be lifted, but you know, it's somewhat cumbersome. But it's up to you as a person as to how long you think it'll be effective to keep in place. And it can be lifted if you have a specific credit goal to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Other common issues: a lot of people file bankruptcy, but what people are not sensitive to is that just because you've completed your bankruptcy and it's discharged doesn't mean that your problems with those debts have ended, because now the credit reporting agencies have to report those debts properly that you put into bankruptcy.
Hmm.
So they should all be zeroed out. They should reflect discharge if you were discharged. The court said that under Chapter 7, you don't owe the debts, or under Chapter 13, you paid the debts. Because as we were discussing before, even though that should happen automatically, even though the creditors should do what the facts dictate, mm-hmm. sometimes they don't. And it's up to you to correct it.
Interesting. Interesting. So let's say, for instance, you know, so back to ID theft. What should I do if I'm a victim of ID theft? Find this out. I pick it up immediately. What am I doing?
Yeah, so it's probably worth emphasizing again because it's so common. File a police report. You get from the Philadelphia, you just call 911. 911 is not just for, you know, emergency criminal activity. And have a police officer come out. They'll come out. You'll give them a report, same way you would do if your cell phone's stolen or something like that, with very low expectation of any correction resulting from it. But once you get a copy of that report, you have to make the report. You'll get a district control number. Then you have to send a request, and I think it's $15, $20 now to get a police report. And you can send that along with a dispute letter, which we started to talk about. I guess I should talk about it briefly now. The dispute letter should be directed to the credit reporting agencies. It's easier to just direct it to all of them because sometimes you don't know which are reporting what information.
Mm-hmm.
And attach the police report and any other information that may be relevant. And ask them in simple language. There's no kind of magic language to use. Just to say, delete this item on my report because it's not mine.
Right.
Or whatever the result is that you want.
Mm-hmm.
So in a situation like that, you want it to be deleted. And just make sure you identify yourself in that letter. Mm-hmm. You put your social security number, you put your address, you put your name. It's always a good idea to enclose a copy of your driver's license as well.
That's greatly appreciated. I mean, we really wanted to drive home the fact that ID theft is a big thing, and that you do have the power to get that situated, get that right. In consultation with you, right? For instance, here's a question a lot of folks are asking. Should they sign up for a monthly credit monitoring service? My add-on question to that is, in doing that, are they also maybe having someone like you giving them guidance on how to structure protecting themselves?
Well, as far as credit monitoring services are concerned, sometimes that's excessive for the average person because it costs money.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have the luxury of paying for it, there's certainly nothing wrong with it. But since you have those free avenues that we talked about, you have that annualcreditreport.com access to free credit information, and you can do it every 4 months, I always counsel people to do that first. As far as setting up plans for the future, mm-hmm. anytime I talk to, even though it's not strictly part of legal representation, whenever we complete a litigation successfully regarding any kind of debt dispute with a corporate entity, I always try to discuss with people how to avoid it in the future. Mm. That's very important. Mm. Now, people don't always do that. Sometimes they wind up right back in the same predicament they did before, because it's hard to change your old ways. But in some situations, it's difficult. For example, with cars, which is something we'll talk about a bit, used cars. People often think that I bought the car as is, I can't sue the car dealer if they lied to me about something. Mm. That's not true.
Mm.
As is a defense to breach of warranty issues, but it's not a defense necessarily to fraud.
Mm.
And something that's very common and something we just talked about with credit reporting is that half the cars on the road have been in an accident, sometimes very serious accidents.
Mm-hmm.
And used car dealers are making money by buying cars at auction that are damaged at the discount that reflects the damage, and then selling them to you by not telling you about that.
Mm.
And if you ask questions about that, they have to tell you the truth.
Mm.
And very often, unfortunately, after we sue and correct those situations, people come back to us and say, hey, I bought another used car. And you know what? I didn't bring it to a mechanic before I bought it, which is the only way of effectively buying a used car. Don't think that certified pre-owned programs from manufacturers are going to necessarily protect you. 160-point inspections are great if they're being done. Mm. But, you know, if that car dealer is being told by the manufacturer, hey, sell 70 pre-owned cars a month, you can bet that there's a lot of those cars that are falling through the cracks, and you may not be getting a 160-point inspection. You may be getting a used car that has all the same problems that the average used car will have.
Mm.
So always, 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 whether you're buying from a private person or a dealership, insist that you have the opportunity to inspect that car. If they say no, you go to the next dealership.
And that is a great segue to go to the break, because we want to delve into that area of consumer debt, car loans, and what can happen with them. So what we're going to do is take a quick break right now. You are listening to Mr. Robert P. Coco of the Law Offices of Robert P. Coco in Center City. He's a Philadelphia consumer lawyer. And we are here on the Ask the Experts show on 610 ESPN Philadelphia.
Did you know that you can stop debt collection abuse? You can actually sue debt collectors. A debt collector who abuses you for the collection of a consumer debt can be sued under a law called the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. Debt collectors cannot threaten you with lawsuits, wage garnishment, liens, or arrest. Call your neighbors, friends, or employer about your debts, or ask them to give you messages. Yell, swear at, insult, or otherwise disrespect you on the phone. Call you at your work after telling them to stop. Let the law offices of Robert Coco PC defend your rights. Attorney Coco handles auto dealer fraud, illegal background checks for employees, credit report disputes, mortgage abuse, and wrongful foreclosures. Stop worrying today and contact attorney Robert Coco, PC, at 215-351-0200. That's 215-351-0200.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Ask the Expert Show on 610 ESPN Philadelphia. I'm your host, Maurice Goodman. Greatly appreciate you taking the time to be with us. We are here with Mr. Robert P. Coco of the law offices of Robert Coco in Center City. He's Philadelphia consumer lawyer, and we're talking about debt. Who isn't in debt? If you are not in debt, congratulations. The rest of us are. So we're doing the best we can to kind of get you through it and do it with someone who knows about it very, very well. Mr. Coco, if you would, before we go into the questionings, please let our listening audience know how they can get in touch with you in your law offices.
Yes, thank you. My phone number is 215-351-0200. And my office is located in Center City at 1500 Walnut Street, right near City Hall. And again, my phone number is 215-351-0200.
Thank you very much for that. We really greatly appreciate it. You were talking about cars. You were talking about the dangers of owning a used car and having situations where you could have a lot of troubles. Is there anything one can do about a judgment for the balance of an auto loan after a car, let's say, was repossessed?
Yes. So there's a couple of more obscure areas of the law that people are not aware of as far as the duty of a finance company who's taken back a car has to do under state law. One thing they have to do is give you notice before they sell the car. It's a contractual duty as well. It's going to be in your financing contract. They have to give you a notice of the intent to sell your car. Mm. And that could be 10 days, it could be 15 days. It's determined by contract. But they have to send that to you, and under our state financing law, they have to send it to you certified mail.
Hmm.
So different things could happen. You could have moved since you entered into the contract, but the finance company knows you moved because they've been sending you bills before that. But you know what? The computer, when they send out the letter, they send it to your old address. So what that means is, the practical effect of that is, if they don't follow that law, they have to accept what they got at auction of your vehicle, right? So if you owe $10,000, they got $5,000, well, they're stuck with $5,000. They can't sue you for the balance, which is a kind of collection lawsuit that people very often face called a deficiency deficiency balance, or can result in a deficiency judgment.
Mm-hmm.
But you shouldn't do that. Also, if the car was taken, and one of the reasons why you get that notice is so you can go and look at the car. And if that car was dragged down the street with sparks flying by a bad tow truck driver, and they just destroyed that car and you treated it like a baby before that, well, if they sell it like that, that's not what they call a commercially reasonable sale under the Uniform Commercial Code. And once again, they're stuck with what they get for that car because it's not your fault that it was towed improperly. Mm. And it's always a good reason. It's always a good idea to go and look at your car for that reason. Hopefully, don't tow it too far away from where you are. Not only that, but you can also have a right to reclaim your personal property.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, don't assume that just because you're in a bad situation that you have no way to fight back. It's always important to learn how you can fight back.
So, am I entitled to reinstate my car loan if I'm in default or my car is repossessed?
Yeah, so generally, no. This is something that's popularly misunderstood.
Mm.
Doesn't mean, though, if you talk to your bank, that they won't agree to do that.
Mm.
And it's always worth asking. Because even though that's commonly misunderstood, it's not uncommon that the bank may say, okay, because a car is a rapidly depreciating asset. As collateral, it's...
As soon as it goes off the lot, right?
Right, yeah, it could drop as much as 50% when it goes off the lot. So you could just imagine when they're selling your car, they're not going to be getting the financing balance. Hmm. That's another big debt bubble in this country is subprime auto loans. But at any rate, they may be very interested as a business decision to let you just pay what you owe. So if you owe $1,000 in past due payments, they may let you pay that rather than pay, you know, a $10,000 balance that's on your loan. But they may not be compelled to do that. However, if another good way to assist yourself in that regard is that if you talk to them on the phone and they agree, and this commonly happens, someone will say, okay, you're late, but we'll accept your payment 5 days late by this date. That's all well and good. The problem is they may not have entered that information in their computer when they talk to you. And then when you go back and say, hey, we had an agreement, that somebody else who's at that company, because you're rarely going to be talking to the same person at a big bank or financing operation, they're going to say, well, there's nothing in the system that tells us that we agreed to do something. So that, once again, if you're going to agree to something over the phone, always confirm it in writing. It's almost a lost art, the writing a letter.
Writing a letter. How
right.
about that?
But you're not writing a novel. You're not looking for a grade on it. All you're looking to do is convey some very basic information. So even if you write it on a napkin, as long as they can get in touch with you and identify your account and understand what you're talking about, you can do that. And you should do that. Because very often in disputes, people call on the phone. That's good. You can establish certain information on the phone, but if it's important, confirm it in writing. Leaving that paper trail can help you defend yourself later.
Has that been a situation where when they got to you and they didn't get it in writing and there's the big dispute and here comes the big fight, have you been able to help the client anyway, even though they may not have gotten what they needed to get in writing done?
Yes, if there's another issue. So, for example, we were just talking about in a repossession situation, if the finance company didn't send the letter, and very often I'll ask the clients if they didn't get it to ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't have the indicia on the letter that it was sent certified mail, that's usually a good indication it wasn't. So if we know we have an issue going in and they have another issue like, oh, they agreed to let me pay late, well, then we can get what they call discovery on that issue, right? If we already have a lawsuit, if we have a good faith basis to allege more than one thing, we can allege it and then try to find the proof after we sue. Now, if we don't have that information ahead of time, it could be a waste of time. So, again, it's always good to cover as many bases as you can and get used to protecting yourself in as many ways as you can.
Greatly appreciate that. Here's one. Should one involuntarily return a car to the bank if they can't pay the financing for it?
Yeah, so that's, again, something you should not do as a first recourse, just like don't file bankruptcy right away, right?
Because the panic issue. It's a panic thing.
Yes, don't panic, right? That's very important. And the reason why a lot of people panic is they don't really know who to call for help. Consumer law is an area of law that's under-practiced in this country, given the level of abuse of corporations against consumers. So that's why it's so valuable for me to have a program like this to let people know that other than Ralph Nader, there's actually other consumer lawyers. I don't even know if people remember now Ralph Nader anymore. But
there is a Robert Coco.
There is a Robert Coco. Yes, I actually exist. I'm not just a disembodied voice. So when it comes to... I'm sorry, Maurice, can you get me back on track? What were we discussing just now?
So the key here is that we're trying to find a way to keep people from panicking.
Oh, voluntarily repossessing the car. Right.
The car.
Don't panic. Yes, exactly. So in a situation like that, whenever I talk to people about the fact that they want to do that, very often that's a way for us to have a conversation about what could be wrong with their original transaction. But first, as a practical matter, you should ask the bank, as we just discussed, whether you could make an arrangement with them, right? So not just paying late, but sometimes they'll let you put one or more payments on the end of the loan. If you have a temporary financial problem, that's a good thing to do.
Okay.
And that's so it's called deferring the payment. And they may agree to that. If they agree to it and you have a short-term financial problem, you just avoided putting a big black mark on your credit, because bankruptcy, repossession, foreclosure, those are the three things you never want to see on your credit or charge off. Those are kiss of death for you as a consumer. They're really going to drop your credit rating. And then if we can avoid the short-term problem, I always want to know, well, tell me about this car. The biggest problem is that people get cars that have been damaged in accidents. And very often they'll go to trade it in. For example, in the situation we just talked about, I can't afford it anymore. I'm going to trade it in for a car I can't afford. And then the car dealer says, oh, well, here's a Carfax. Your car was in a really serious accident. It was hit by a bus. And you're like, wait, what a second. What? I didn't know about that. I even asked him, was this car in any accidents? They didn't tell me about that.
The car looks fine.
Right, right. Because it's very easy to make a car look cosmetically acceptable, but they're very complicated. There's hundreds of thousands of parts in them, and most of us don't know the first thing about them, especially since they're all run by computers. That's a running theme here. Computers are our friends and our enemies. So let's talk about that, because once again, now you have a debt. Maybe you shouldn't be paying that debt at all. Maybe you should be suing the car dealer. Mm. And even though that's not the reason why you called me, there could be another issue you're not aware of that could help you out of this situation. And that's why it's so important to get a general perspective of what your entire debt picture is and make sure you ask every question that could be asked as to whether or not a corporation took advantage of you in that transaction.
Mm-hmm. Greatly appreciate that. So we pivot now to homes. How many people since 2007, 2008 have been struggling with the subprime issue, the Great Recession of 2008, have been now working their way through it over the ensuing 10 years? Some folks still need the basics. What does it mean to be in foreclosure?
So this is something that it's important for people to understand, not because it's important to understand legal terms in a vacuum, but to understand them for purposes of you taking action as a homeowner. So being in foreclosure is not the same thing as being in default. Foreclosure is a legal process. In Pennsylvania, it's a process that involves the bank suing you. So they file a complaint against you. So it's ABC Bank versus John Smith. And they have to serve it on you at your home, commonly using a process server, a sheriff, or a private person. Or sometimes they can get permission to serve you by mail. Mm. And once you get that document, it's very important that you take action, because you only have 30 days to answer that document. And you should... avoid a common mistake, which is sometimes people take that document too lightly and try to answer it themselves and file something themselves. Mm-hmm. It's always a good idea to get an experienced lawyer to help you with a legal issue. But, you know, sometimes it's money. Sometimes it's not being able to find someone who's knowledgeable about foreclosure, because, once again, people want to just put you in bankruptcy. But it's important that you do that. And there's housing counselors that usually are available. You can ask them who lawyers are that are knowledgeable, and you should always find out what your best legal defense is to this matter.
The next question I want to ask, I want you to give us some stories, some scenarios, if you can, about how you've defended your clients. Can the bank take my home after I'm in foreclosure? This is a big one, we think, and love to hear some examples of how you've defended your people.
Right. So before I give an example, it's important to understand that even though this is a serious process, it doesn't result in you just losing your home after the complaint's filed. You're entitled to something called due process under the Constitution, under Pennsylvania Constitution, too. And that means there's a process by they have to engage in order to take your home. So they have to give you an opportunity to defend yourself. You're entitled to discovery. They have to win, and then they can take your house to sheriff's sale. Hmm. Of course, you're going to oppose the sheriff's sale. And that's a lengthy process. In the Philadelphia, that could be an 18-month process. So it's not going to happen overnight. Defending these actions can be, there's a variety of issues. One that commonly arises is that you have an FHA, Federal Housing Administration, or VA loan. Sometimes people don't know if they have those or not. So the easiest way to know if you do is if you put down less than 20% on your home when you bought it, if it's not a refinance loan, then you probably have an FHA loan. So it's subsidized, so it allows people to become homeowners for less than a 20% conventional down payment.
Okay.
Now, the important thing about that is that when a lender makes an FHA loan or a VA loan, a Veterans Administration loan, they're entitled to make a claim on a HUD insurance fund to get back the amount of the default, right? Okay. That's something they're given to assume that risk, right, because they don't have that 20% down payment. But you know what? To get that money from the government, they have to do certain things first, which is only fair. And what they have to do is adhere to the what they call loss mitigation procedures to help you stay in the home.
Okay.
And very briefly, those options involve modification or deferred payments. And if you can afford, you may have gone through financial pressures, you're now in foreclosure. the clouds have passed. You can afford your monthly payment. You can't afford to pay back have fallen behind on. Mm-hmm. But the FHA loss mitigation regulations are so powerful that if you can afford your regular monthly payment, you can stay in that home and pay that loan. The problem is the mortgage company treats your loan as if it's a conventional loan. They don't offer you any of those loss mitigation alternatives.
Loss mitigation.
Until you answer the complaint and say, hey, I have an FHA loan. I'm not entitled to all these things, and you didn't give them to me.
Huh.
And it's very important. It's a technicality, but these technicalities are very important to protect yourself. You're not going to be able to say that on your own in a complaint. That's not going to help you in bankruptcy. Why should you file bankruptcy if federal law already allows you to get yourself into a good credit standing with regards to your loan? You don't want to pile on your problems by now throwing a bankruptcy and endangering your credit further. No, you want to correct the situation. The other common scenario we have, and this is in keeping what I talked about first and fighting back, is sometimes a bank is just plain wrong about you owing money. They stopped taking your payments because they made a mistake.
They may have lied.
A mistake. A terrible mistake. All right? They don't have to be evil. You don't have to show that they're trying to. A lot of people say that. The bank's trying to take my home. Mm-hmm. Well, it's possible. And they could be doing bad things. But mostly, they're big corporations relying too much on software rather than people. And they're making serious mistakes. Now, the problem is this is a mistake that could cause you to lose your home. Now, once we find out if that's true, we're not only going to defend the foreclosure, but we're going to do things to lay the groundwork for you to sue that bank. Because now you may not just be entitled to stop the foreclosure, have them reinstate your loan. You may be entitled to emotional distress damages because they almost took your house for no reason.
That's powerful. Once again, turning the tables.
Turning the tables on them.
So what we'll do now, Robert, is we're going to take a break because that was powerful information, and we'll pivot right back to it after that. You're listening to the Ask the Experts radio show, and Mr. Robert P. Coco of the law offices of the Robert P. Coco here on the Ask the Experts radio show at 610 ESPN Philadelphia.
Did you know that you can stop debt collection abuse? You can actually sue debt collectors. A debt collector who abuses you for the collection of a consumer debt can be sued under a law called the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. Debt collectors cannot threaten you with lawsuits, wage garnishment, liens, or arrest. Call your neighbors, friends, or employer about your debts or ask them to give you messages. Yell, swear at, insult, or otherwise disrespect you on the phone. Call you at your work after telling them to stop. Let the law offices of Robert Coco PC defend your rights. Attorney Coco handles auto dealer fraud, illegal background checks for employees, credit report disputes, mortgage abuse, and wrongful foreclosures. Stop worrying today and contact Attorney Robert Coco PC at 215-351-0200. That's 215-351-0200.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Ask the Experts show here on 610 ESPN Philadelphia. Greatly appreciate you being on the show today. We are speaking with Mr. Robert Coco of the law offices of Robert Coco, the Philadelphia consumer lawyer. We were talking about home foreclosures, and I know just before we move on to the other piece of business here that we have, with all the debt that's going on, how far along are we working out all of the subprime debt issues? How many issues are you still battling with as a consumer lawyer as it pertains to foreclosures?
So the lending issues are the issue with mortgage loans is not so much what it used to be when I got involved with the loans, which is how the loans were originated or how they were made in an unfair way. Mm-hmm. That's long in the past, and there's not as many bad loans being made as far as the terms and the affordability and the expense of the loans. The issue now is what we were just talking about, which is what we call technically servicing of the loans. Mm-hmm. So there's different companies that own your loan and that service or collect the money for your loan. That's just really what it means, and makes a computer accounting of where your money's going every month. The issues are those computer accounting or servicing disputes these days, and that's what leads to the foreclosure. because the banking industry is very politically protected in this country. It dominates the economic life of our country. And as a result, they're not really being forced to do what they should do. Regulations were relaxed that led to the crisis. We got a little bit of regulation back with Dodd-Frank. That's being loosened. That's been loosened again by Democrats and Republicans. And we may be facing another situation where the banks are going to go on another abusive tear, making loans that are irresponsible, and it's going to cause more problems.
Interesting. We will go on to employment. Thank you for foreclosure. There's a lot of people out there that just got some information they really need. On to employment. Does debt or credit affect a person's chances of getting hired for a job?
It certainly can. It won't be relevant to a lot of jobs, but two positions that it will be very relevant to are law enforcement. They don't basically want you being bribed if you're a law enforcement officer. So if you're financially vulnerable, that can make you vulnerable to that misconduct. Also, if you're in finance, it's hard for you to convince other people that you should manage their finances if you can't manage your own. And so a company that's hiring you doesn't want to see that. I am currently representing someone who was a victim of their, and it's a major bank that's servicing her loan, made very serious mistakes, caused her to overpay her loan by thousands of dollars to the point where she ran out of money, and she filed a bankruptcy, which she shouldn't have had to do. And the repercussion of that was that even though she was making a very good living, she was now not allowed to get a job. It was very difficult for her to get a job. Before she got employed again, that was like wearing a scarlet A on her chest.
Right, the scarlet letter.
Yes. So these issues can have serious repercussions in your life, and one of them is employment.
Now, here comes the big one. Can an employer run a credit report or background check without an individual's permission, written permission?
No. There's a federal law which we've discussed, the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which requires you to give written permission in a dedicated document. So it's got to be a page dedicated only to that issue, whether credit or background's being run. And the reason is that your credit information is coming from something called your consumer file, right? Which is just a data bank of information about you. But it doesn't just include your credit history. That same computer source has information about your employment, has information about your education, about your driving history, and any criminal history. And you want all those things to be accurate, especially if you don't have a criminal history, but all of a sudden somebody's saying you do have one.
Which is never good.
Never good. It's hard to get a job with a criminal history. And that's something we could dedicate a whole hour to, is how your criminal history, even if you have one, should not affect your ability to be hired. But at any rate, this is the same pool of computer information. The same inaccuracies can arise. So not only should you be allowed to permit it to be run, but you should also be permitted by an employer to see it if they choose not to hire you based on that. Even if it's only partially based on that information, you need to be able to see it and be able to tell the employer by law that there's a mistake in there. So if you can, for the obvious reason that if you can correct it, you might be able to get the job.
So is an employer required to disclose a job application which might be revealed in their credit or background check?
Yeah, they should, to the job applicant, yes. They should disclose that information. They should give you a physical copy of the background check so you can look at it and have a period of time of at least 5 days to look at it and tell them, hey, something's not right here. And that could arise in a lot of different contexts. It could be because your credit is inaccurate. It could be because they're saying you didn't get a degree from a college that's relevant to what you're doing. That, hey, you have all these tickets on your record. But you know what? It turns out it's not you, John Smith. It's John Smith in North Carolina got all those moving violations. And if you're going for a job as a bus driver, that's going to be very meaningful.
Indeed.
So you always want to be able to control what information is out there that corporations can use.
Very good. What we're going to do is we're going to take one more quick break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Ask the Experts radio show on ESPN Philadelphia.
Did you know that you can stop debt collection abuse? You can actually sue debt collectors. A debt collector who abuses you for the collection of a consumer debt can be sued under a law called the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. Debt collectors cannot threaten you with lawsuits, wage garnishment, liens, or arrest. Call your neighbors, friends, or employer about your debts or ask them to give you messages. Yell, swear at, insult, or otherwise disrespect you on the phone. Call you at your work after telling them to stop. Let the law offices of Robert Coco PC defend your rights. Attorney Coco handles auto dealer fraud, illegal background checks for employees, credit report disputes, mortgage abuse, and wrongful foreclosures. Stop worrying today and contact Attorney Robert Coco PC at 215-351-0200. That's 215-351-0200.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for being listeners here today on the Ask the Experts radio show. We are back here with Mr. Robert P. Coco with a couple of minutes left in the show. Robert, here's a couple of final questions. Is there no litigation alternatives for an individual under the consumer laws? Should they pay a company to repair their credit?
I would always be very hesitant to pay someone to fix my credit.
Okay.
For the very simple reason that most of what those companies do, you can do yourself. With just a little education and a little bit of confidence. So, for example, when it comes to debts, if you have credit card debt, which is very common, the one thing you can do is obviously negotiate those debts away. One thing you want to be very careful of, if you pay a debt for less than you owe, you always want to make sure in writing that the debt collector or the creditor agrees to then delete that debt from your credit report. Because if you pay less than you owe, that's actually not good. That's bad, right? You've gotten rid of the debt. You may have stopped the debt collection calls, but the creditors don't want to see that you're shortchanging other creditors, mm-hmm. right? So it's perfectly legal to do that. It's perfectly practical and appropriate in a lot of situations, but make sure your credit report reflects that. So you don't really need somebody to do that. I've sued debt negotiation companies, so-called, sometimes run by lawyers, because credit repair organizations under the federal law can't charge you until they've actually fixed your credit. Mm-hmm. Then they can charge you. But a lot of times they charge you up front. Lawyers don't have to do that if they're engaging in credit repair, so it's somewhat of a loophole. The problem is there's some bad lawyers out there. I don't care who I have to sue to protect a consumer. If it's another lawyer, that's fine. If they're breaking the law, I'm willing to do that. But you don't want to give your money over to them when you can do a lot of it yourself. You can start low and negotiate to the point where you can afford to pay off a debt, do it one debt at a time, and you can get to the same place. That's mostly what they're offering to do for you. So I would avoid running the risk, which is a very high risk, of being ripped off. There's a lot of companies who advertise on the internet. It's easy to look like a real corporation or a real entity on the internet, but a lot of them are phony.
And the key is the best course is to consult you. I mean, be it be in a bankruptcy scenario, not consult you is a key thing here. Is the best whenever they get into a pinch, they're worried about bankruptcy, they're worried about other issues, come to you first. Is that correct?
That's correct. And even if I can't file a lawsuit for you or act directly on your behalf as an advocate in court, I could still counsel you. And I do it all the time with people for free. For example, if you're going to small claims court, I can take money to go into small claims court to defend someone, but it's not a practical use of their money or my time, because very often whoever loses in small claims court appeals. So I'd rather give you free advice to see how you can best defend yourself or help yourself, or just make a practical decision in life about to do something or not to do something. I'm always happy to help people, and it doesn't always mean that I'm going to make money from your situation, but that's okay.
That's appreciated. That's greatly appreciated. Well, Bob, we are beginning to bump up against the clock. What I'd certainly like to do is to give our listening audience another chance to hear how they can get in contact with you, how they can reach out to you, be it social media or otherwise.
Yes. So I did not point out my website last time. It's www.phillyconsumerlaw.com. My phone number is 215-351-0200, or phillyconsumerlaw.com has all my contact information and other information you can get about me and about the laws that protect you.
That's greatly appreciated. One other question before we go. Do you do seminars? Do you reach out to people, you know, one-on-one, face-to-face?
Absolutely. If you have a church group or you have any kind of civic organization, I'm always happy to come out and talk for free. I talk for a living, so it's always a pleasure to do so and spread the gospel of consumer law.
So, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Mr. Robert P. Coco of the Law Offices of Robert P. Coco in Center City. The website, again, what, www.phillyconsumerlaw.com. So that's how he is known. And he's been here with us on the Ask the Expert show, and we greatly appreciate you being on. I'd like to thank my sound engineer, Mr. Mike Vito. Thank you very much for keeping us moving over this hour. And we, the folks here at Ask the Experts, thank you, our listening audience, and taking the time to listen to us on a weekend day and listening to some of the best and the brightest at what they do. What we're going to do now is just let you know to keep listening to us and keep coming back to us over and over again. Every chance you get, ask any question you can. And thank you for listening to the Ask the Experts radio show here on 610 ESPN Philadelphia. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Ask the Expert show today. Join us again next week for more specialists in their field of legal health, financial, and home improvement.